Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Ugly Betties. My name is Steven.
My name is George.
George, guess what?
What?
We have another guest.
Yes, we do have
another guest. We're on a roll with guests.
Yes, we are. And I'm very thrilled to introduce this next guest. He is my friend. You might have seen him in movies like The Rules of Attraction, Can't Hardly Wait.
I've seen that movie.
But I'm a Cheerleader.
It says on my list.
More recently, The Card Counter, where he got to work with Oscar Isaac. And please welcome my friend, the fabulous Joel Michaely.
Woo! Can I cheers for myself? No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I'm so cheering. For
I just feel like it's so weird because, like, I hadn't seen Ugly Betty in 10 gazillion years. And so just watching it, I was like, wow, I can't believe how much I actually relate to her. And today we feel like we're having a Betty kind of day, you know?
Yes.
Like, one of those, we just can't pull it together. Your heart's in the right place and you're really trying, and alas, it ain't coming together. So,
But so, yeah.
Me on my best Betty, my best Betty version.
I'm always on my try to be on my best Betty version. But yeah, we're talking about season 3, episode 10, Bad Amanda.
Yeah.
Right. So let's dive in. What do you think of the episode?
I mean, was she really bad Amanda, or was she just like Amanda at her normal Amanda-ness?
You know. What
I mean? Like, I was excited because, like, when I saw the title, I was like, yes, I love her so much, you know? Like, I was like, a full episode of like Becky Newton realness, like, sign me the frig up, you know? So I was like, wanting her to go like fully off the charts, and I didn't feel like she went off the charts. I feel like she was like, you know, she was, I guess, you know, troublesome Amanda, not bad Amanda, you know?
Yeah. I love a Becky Newton centered episode, because, you know, I feel like every single episode Becky Newton is the MVP. Like, she's always basically the MVP. She steals the spotlight every single time, in my opinion.
And I think with Amanda, it's not so much that she's bad. She's just not aware, I would say. She's out of touch with her surroundings. She doesn't quite always read the room, basically.
And I think she wants Amanda to concentrate on Betty.
She what? Say that again?
I think this is like too much Amanda concentrated in Betty's life. So this is just all...
Right. It was a lot for Betty to take in. But like, as the audience viewers, we're like, I'm always just like, more Amanda is good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I also wish this episode had a lot more Michael Urie and a lot more of the nefariousness between Michael Urie and Vanessa Williams and stuff like that. Like, that dynamic I find really enjoyable. And there was like mini micro doses of it, but like, not enough. It's, you know, but it's still super cute.
Yeah, but it's good to have a Becky Newton centered episode, because she deserves it. She deserves all the accolades.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. I mean, like, you know, it's so crazy because it's like, I feel like they don't make shows right now in this current era of, like, you know, just a show with like a lot of humor and heart, and it's, you know, it's not very, you know, it's not a case of the week, or it's not very episodic in that regard. It's just like super funny and super fish out of water, and has a lot of humor and heart and comes from an emotional standpoint. And like, I feel like we're missing that right now. Do you guys feel like there's anything like that currently?
Well, I mean, Steven and I constantly talk about this every week when we do this show, but what was great about ABC at the time was, if you look back at this era in just ABC, they were doing very bold, progressive programming at the time that was pushing the boundaries of beyond just broadcast television.
What about...
You had Grey's Anatomy, you had Desperate Housewives.
Dirty Sexy Money. Wasn't Dirty Sexy Money?
Yeah, Dirty Sexy Money. Pushing Daisies.
Oh, Pushing Daisies.
Samantha Who. They were really pushing the boundaries with concept.
Brothers and Sisters.
Yes.
Maybe. I haven't seen it yet. It's on my list. But maybe Ted Lasso might fall. Ted Lasso and Schitt's Creek. I think Schitt's Creek. I love Schitt's Creek. Maybe that falls in shows with a lot of heart, this humor that comes from an emotional place sometimes.
Yeah, I could see that on both of those. You know, there's definitely elements.
Ted Lasso definitely has moments where he gets vulnerable.
Yeah, and he's also kind of like very fish out of water, kind of, you know, like it's actually has a lot of similarities. That's a pretty good example. But it's like, but it's George, to your point, like they were definitely taking bigger swings.
Yeah.
The network television back then. And it's like, and I feel like, I can't remember when this was in regards to the writer's strike.
This was a year after the writer's strike.
Yeah, season three, they had a full episode order. Season two was the one that got cut short because of the writer's strike. And that was right. 2007 to 2008.
So, like, there was amazing shows, like all the ones we just mentioned before, like right before the writer's strike. And I was really watching a lot of them. Oh, and Boston Legal was also ABC at the time. Yeah. And that was phenomenal and so smart and so funny and so creative. And then the writer's strike hit and I feel like everything shifted. It's like, I was watching Ugly Betty every week, like appointment television, as well as Dirty Sexy Money, Boston Legal, Brothers and Sisters, all those ABC ones, and until the strike hit. And then I lost paying attention to television like that. And apparently so did huge portions of the country because the numbers plummeted when it took like a year and a half off. You know?
And then everything started to move to the premium channels like HBO and right. Showtime, and now it's over where the streaming services, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, stop.
Now they're the ones that I feel like are doing the progressive push the boundaries programming, and now network television has seemed to go back to just playing it safe.
Totally, but it's so weird. It was like a heyday of like ABC.
Yeah, ABC was sure. Really on a roll, on a renaissance with the experimental pushing the boundaries programming in the mid to late 2000s.
It's weird. I never thought of it that way, but thanks for pointing that out. When I turned on to the episode, it was just really fun to be like, oh my God, look, Anna Ortiz. I love her so much. Like, you know, like all these characters, seeing them again after all these years was really exciting for me.
Yeah, it's just like, and now she's on Love, Victor. It's like, I love like
playing a completely different mother than the mother she played in Ugly Betty. It's like a night and day contrast between the different kind of mother she plays in Love, Victor. So,
and it's another thing. Like when I during the 2020, that's when I watched the West Wing, and I saw the actor who played Ignacio. He was in the West Wing.
Yeah, Tony Plana.
They're like, wow, he was in the West Wing. Look at him work. Look at him get book gigs. It's just amazing to see all these people.
Tony Plana is like one of the unsung heroes of this show, to be honest. I think he grounds the show in such an emotional
standpoint
that it's like beautiful work. Like it's really, he does some incredible stuff on this entire show. Like he doesn't get to come in with like the witty repartee and big jokes, but like he adds so much heart to the entire show that it's not as showy as some of the other performances that we all probably gravitate towards, but my goodness, is he strong.
Especially in this season and the next season, but this season, like he just, yeah, just
that's a great point though, because if you really do think about it, yes, Ugly Betty is a big, flashy, larger than life, over colorful production. So to get somebody like Tony Plana who can come in and really ground that back into reality, that's an excellent point you made there, Joel.
Yeah, I haven't thought, because for especially as a viewer and as an artist watching it, now I realize like they get cast for those characters to ground those show.
Yeah, and he really
you need a balance from every actor, every character when it comes to an ensemble, and he knows his part of the balance is to ground it.
Yeah, right. And it's so interesting because it's like, you know, when you think back on the show, you think of all the comedy and the humor and the like craziness, and so although you gravitate towards those characters, but like if you really think about it, like the grounding and the heart, you know, a lot of that would fall into Tony's section and some of the other more grounded
moments. Yeah, and everybody, and every character has grounded moments. Like Wilhelmina has her grounded moments.
Yes.
Totally, which I love. Then it makes her a fully fleshed human as opposed to like a caricature or anything. Like, but Vanessa Williams is just, I mean, delicious. Like, yes. Chef kiss on this entire show. She's just, wow. She's a weapon of comedy destruction. She's so fun for me.
And she was one of the few that I think she got an Emmy nomination like every year.
No, she got an Emmy nomination twice, the first season and the second season.
Okay.
She didn't get third and fourth.
She eats it up. Like, yes. She is having the time. I don't know.
But let's get back to talking about this episode. We can talk about network television.
But that's why we have
unbelievable when you see the first look of poor America, what they put her in for the majority of this episode, the outfit. It's like, it looks like Versace and Poochie like boned, and they had this like baby child outfit that they decided to put on poor America. I mean, it was, rough outfit.
And I love how I see the evolution of her costume design from season one to where she goes to season four. I think it's season three, since her character's been around mode more often. She has fashionable stuff, but she still puts it together in awkward ways that you would normally not put it together. It's
still put together like super clashing, which is why it was Versace banged Poochie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, this is so much to take in. And then they like took her outside, and then they threw a crazy coat and gloves to boot, like Jackie O style on top of it. I was like, what are you people thinking? And I was like, it's probably like 95 degrees in August in Los Angeles when they were like shooting this episode.
This is actually New York.
Right. And then I realized, I was like, I think they moved it to New York in season three, right? Yep. Yeah. So, well, probably even hotter in New York in August.
Humidity.
when they shot the poor episode, I was like, if I was poor America, I would have been sweating bullets. Like, I would have just been like, cut, give me pat down the face. Like, nightmare in that outfit. That's all I kept thinking. I was like, how is she doing all this dialogue in the streets in 100 degree weather? Unreal. She's a consummate professional.
Yes.
America for president.
Yes.
As we've all seen, she's become quite vocal and quite active and quite political, and she is phenomenal. Besides a great actor on the show, what a tremendous woman America has turned into, you know?
Yeah, and I've been wanting to watch Superstore. I never got to sit down and watch Superstore.
I enjoyed it. I've seen episodes of it. I like it. It's a good show.
That's the show on, it was on NBC.
NBC, yeah.
The show that I went to was The Good Place. I love The Good Place.
I like The Good Place as well. That was a good one too.
I would love to bid on that show.
So Joel, what else did you gather from the notes there? I see you looking down pensively at your notes.
I'm looking down at notes? I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just like looking down and I'm just like, I mean, literally I'm looking at my notes right now and it says, Vanessa Williams is so gorgeous. Like three lines of O's. It's painful.
And just her quippy remarks. Like when she says towards the end of the episode, the way Betty looks at a cheeseburger. Mm. Oh, just. It's so sad that the fashion industry has that side to it where it's like, ooh.
And have you ever been like in the plot of this episode when Amanda and Betty, when they do get that article and they go out, it's been that basically, I haven't done that. I can't say that for legal reasons because we're recording this, but. Have you guys ever, you know, went out, like, did a lot of high-class stuff and not pay a cent?
No, I've never tried.
You mean dined and ditched or got your meal comped? Very different. I mean, they ended up getting their meal
comped. Yes, that was brilliant.
I have most definitely found ways to get my meal comped, and I've definitely gone to restaurants where they comped me for whatever reasons or purposes, and for whatever reason that they would want me to be calmed, you know. But like,
I've never dined and dashed before.
Me neither.
Dine and dash. I've never done that. That's something I've done. I'm scared because I'm the girl that would get, you know, totally caught and thrown in the clink, and my entire life and career would be over in like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. I think I walked out of a restaurant and forgot to pay and like turned around like 5 minutes later, you know, and like, oh my God, I didn't pay, you know? I've done that. I've definitely forgotten my credit card before where I had nothing on me to pay, where they've let me like leave. Like some of my regular restaurants, I've done that multiple times.
Mm.
And sometimes they tend to know me at the restaurants I go to. They're like, well, get it, or you can pay us next time, or I've come back an hour later with my credit card. I've done stuff like that, but never like point blank, just like started running. You know,
if you're good, you can always get it for free.
Nah.
True. I mean, if you're on a date and somebody's taking you out on that date, I mean, it's like the same thing, right?
Sure, a date.
Sitting on the date and you're like, who's going to pay for this? It better be you with your big checkbook. Or
wait, who uses checkbooks anymore?
Well, I'm just saying it was a, you know.
It was a time and a place.
Sure. I mean, I use my checkbook for my rent. I don't know. That's about it.
I use Venmo.
Yep, I pay my rent online.
Yeah, but I love that sequence of Betty like stepping out of her comfort zone because she's always been so.
Christina does get Betty to. I'm not Christina. Amanda. Amanda does get Betty to live in this episode.
Yes, she's always been. You know,
she really has to finally enjoy New York City as an actual New Yorker.
Mm.
I like that she learns to like use also what she's got. Like now she has some, you know, power and leverage working at Mode, and everyone else is going to throw it around and in everybody else's face. And so why can't Betty take advantage of it every now and then? You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be like rude about it or expected or entitled about your position, but like, you know, she needs to know that she has a position now. And there are some benefits, and it's good that she got to use them, you know?
Well, I mean, the vibe that I kept getting from this episode, because I love the Yeti storyline, mm-hmm. with the program, and you see, like, Betty moving up, you know, in the world. So I just get, like, a total... This season, I'm reminded a lot of Mary Tyler Moore, just because, you know, you're going to make it after all, and she's moving up in the world, and she's claiming her place. So I get a lot of Mary Tyler Moore vibes this season.
Who's Mary Tyler Moore? I'm just kidding. That's how you get shot.
Yeah, that'd be blasphemous.
I'm like, ma'am.
that's like sitting someone down on someone's lap saying,
Mary Tyler Moore introduced us to Sue Ann Nevins.
Mm.
And I loved Bea Arthur's reasoning for not wanting to do Golden Girls unless the two of them switch parts, mm-hmm. because she was like, I'm not interested in doing Maude and Vivian move in with Sue Ann Nevins.
Mm-mm.
So
wow, did she really say that?
Yeah. And then afterwards, then Rue had to convince B, no, we switched it. I'm going to play the vamp this time around, and Betty's going to play the ditzy airhead. And then B was like, now I'm interested. So that's what got B to do the show. If they hadn't switched parts, B wouldn't have done it.
Mm.
Wow.
I love Maude. Maude is a great show.
I've only seen, I think, clips of Maude, really. I've never really watched
it. It's free on streaming on
IMDb
TV. Yeah, I've been watching the first two seasons.
I bet it's super groundbreaking. Very, I know it's very political.
Yeah, because that's the first. That's where
it's kind of like Designing Woman style.
Brown. That was Esther Rolls right before she did Good Time. She played Florida in Maude, and that was a spinoff. Good Times was a spinoff of Maude. And Maude was a spinoff of All in the Family and, you know, Norman Lear. May he reign forever.
And the Jeffers. Sends was a spinoff also.
Well, one of the things that I always love about going back and watching Ugly Betty now in 2020, 2021, is it's always like going back to look at a time.
It's like, why are you a year behind us, George? Why are you still in 2020? We're almost 2022.
I say we started this in 2020, so that's why I referenced.
Oh, it. I was like, we're almost in 2022. You can count the days to 2022.
Watching this from that, you just get like little time references, like Tomcat got referenced.
Oh my God, I wrote that down. I was like, I can't believe it's such a place in time, the Tomcat reference. It was like
Tomcat.
Tom, that was back when Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes were married. Remember that?
Oh, okay. That's what I thought it was.
I remember that. Feels like a lifetime ago when they were married now.
And remember when Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman was.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have immortal stuff in their work as actors to remind us that they were a couple of Days of Thunder. Eyes wide shut's
amazing. I love
Far and Away. They have like immortal work as actors.
I actually love Far and Away as well.
I'm excited to see her be Lucille Ball. That's gonna be interesting.
I still am on the team of people, and I know I might stand in a very lonely room with this one, but I'm sorry. I think Aaron Sorkin should have taken a chance on Deborah Messing, but that's just me. I feel like Deborah Messing looks exactly like her, and you know, but I get that he wanted to go with somebody more serious. And I
can
get
stay
it.
In that ballpark. Let me tell you, Nicole's hilarious. She's gonna crush.
Okay, I'm excited to see what she does.
And Aaron Sorkin said there's only like three minutes of the I Love Lucy show in the movie. So
yeah, it's gonna be a dramatic take on it. But I was definitely on the side of I wish Deborah was considered. But you know, it's all good. I mean. They got to do a Will and Grace I Love Lucy episode, and she crushed it in that.
I heard she was amazing on that. I need to watch that.
Because she looks exactly like Lucille Ball.
I mean,
it's uncanny.
I love in this episode that like Amanda teaches like Betty how to like go on like a freebie tour and like get like shopping like stuff for free, and like they do like the full like you know old school shopping montage, you know, but like trying to get freebies and stuff.
And then I love that moment earlier in the episode when Betty is trying to pitch her free stuff and it's boring everybody in that meeting.
Yeah,
it's like museums and it's like nerdy, you know, intellectual stuff that wrong audience.
I mean, I like a good free museum.
I do too, but you know, for a Mode magazine, wrong audience.
Sure, but I remember in like my era when I was like super broke and stuff, it was like I was going on that like freebie tour as well, you know, trying to get like free food at every free hand passed appetizers everywhere I want, you know, Diet Cokes till I was blue in the face, you know, just grabbing them as much as I could at like any crap party I could roll into and fill up. So like watching Amanda do that, and I just know the hustle, you know, she goes to play the game.
Yeah,
she looks fierce, she could talk the talk, walk the walk, and then like, but she ain't got a cent to her name, you know.
I know I'm still in that broke actor's life, so I'm still in like, you know what, I can still learn a thing or two from this episode, how to get cheap food, how to get free food.
I mean, I used to get free meals like almost every night of the week, just going to events or trying to, you know?
And the one who really came in to convince Betty to live her life, I love that you brought up Ana Ortiz earlier, because Hilda really does convince Betty, you got to live. You're in the city. Go enjoy it. I loved Hilda's moment in that episode when she's saying to Betty, look, you got to live.
Yeah. Like,
what's the purpose of being in a city if you're not going to explore it and enjoy it? And if everything's just about work and home and work and home.
Yeah, that's especially like people move to LA. They're all about the hustle, and the hustle is perfectly fine. It's very important.
Yes.
But you know,
you have to take moments to also live too.
Yes, because this is.
I always tell people when I stopped killing myself trying to make things happen career wise, that was when things started to move better for me, was when I stopped killing myself over everything. I always tell people, you know, you got to be passionate, you got to work hard, but you also have to not drive yourself insane, and you have to take the moments to really enjoy life.
Did you just gesture me when you say insane?
I'm
sometimes the love and the passion can like be debilitating.
Yes.
Because you're too I don't want to say too passionate, because you're just like, it's you're so like, you know,
super tunnel vision, super passionate. Like, I've definitely seen myself implode myself with over passion and over desire and, you know, but
I have a ritual that I like to do whenever I'm working, which mm-hmm. is at the end of the shoot day, I like to go back into the hair and makeup, and I like to have them remove my makeup. Because for me, that's a very therapeutic, like, okay, I'm putting the character down and I'm going home. That way the character doesn't, you know, follow me home or just stay.
I'm the polar opposite. I'm like, damn, my face looks good. Let's go out on the town. I thought the Czech face off was like the funniest thing ever. With like Becky and the manager of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
They were like eyeing each other down. They were
doing
close-ups on their eyes. So funny. I was like dying. I thought that was awesome.
Shout out to Judith Light. I loved her work in this, and she can immediately sense that Daniel is having feelings for the fiance of
Connor's
fiance, and Judith Light does literally try to slap Daniel out of it. She gets her share snap out of it moment.
Yeah, I mean, Judith is always
love Judith Light.
Same.
Oh, and did you watch Impeachment?
No.
Judith Light is in Impeachment as well, and does fabulous work in Impeachment as well.
For sure. I mean, I've been on the Judith train forever, particularly in theater. I saw so much of her theater work. I've seen her at least a dozen times in shows, you know? Like, there was a big era where, like, people weren't casting her, and then I feel like the start of her resurgence was Ugly Betty.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then she did Other Deader Cities, and I forgot the other play.
Thing before Ugly Betty was Who's the Boss?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that was the 80s.
Yeah, that was the 80s, so.
And she won those two Tonys back-to-back, Other Desert City, and I forgot the other one off the top of my head. And then she did Wit on Broadway, and then she did Transparent, and then she did...
Yeah, she had to come from being known from Who's the Boss and then like tear everything down, go do theater, become like the greatest in theater, like become a grand dam of theater. And then television movies have come calling back, and they should. She's a genius.
Jessica Lange kind of did. She went back to theater. She took a pause again when American Horror Story happened.
Mm-hmm. And I will say, I do like how you do see little spurts of Mark's and Amanda's growth as the series progresses. Because in this episode, you do see Amanda get a second job.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay. Oh my God, it
was crazy working out of Fridays.
But good for her. That shows growth. That shows that she's like starting to care and like.
I love that they never said that she worked on a Fridays. They just kept showing her.
They probably couldn't get the rights,
right? Like all that flair and the little suspenders and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I think she would have a coronary before being able to work on a Fridays, you know. But it shows responsibility, and then she's taking control.
I love how.
Well, what the show constantly does is it breaks down the difference in class, because Amanda and Betty came from completely different classes of like wealth, whereas Amanda was adopted into it, but mm-hmm. she grew up around wealth and privilege. So I do like how all throughout this show, you do see the class differences and how it doesn't matter how much money you have or how little money you have, everybody has problems.
Mm-hmm. And I also love this. One of my favorite things about Ugly Betty in general is how Betty, when she makes everybody a better person by them being around her.
And then Wilhelmina definitely had some other funny moments that I noted, like when she was trying to, how she was trying to act around Connor because Connor had turned down her advances in the prior episode. Top of the morning to you. She just doesn't know what to say, and that's the best she's got is top of the morning to you.
Right, that was pretty funny.
And she beats herself up over it. She's like, really? Top of the morning to you? That's what I say.
And that's the powerful... Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was going to say, Yes.
We usually ask our guests, what's your relationship to Ugly Betty and your connection? So you almost went in for Ugly Betty for the pilot.
Well, you know some of my other connections with it. Yeah. I was very good friends with Sylvia Horta, who created Ugly Betty.
Rest in peace.
And he was an incredible, incredible man. Very smart, very funny, very charming, an amazing son. He loved his mom, Anna Horta, so much. And I got to go with them to Paris once, which was incredible. And, you know, he was a prince. Loved him.
That's one of the reasons why I felt compelled to do this in 2020 was I wanted to honor his legacy, because not only did he do this, but he wrote one of my favorite horror movies of all time, Urban Legend. And I recently went to a Valentine event on Zoom, which was Jamie Blanks' second movie he directed after Urban Legend. And I got to ask him about his experiences with Silvio on the set. So,
yeah, Silvio was a great creative mind, super charming, smart, lovely. I miss him. You know, but you know.
Wherever he is, he appreciates that two fanboys got together and did a grassroots podcast.
Ugly Betty was a real big feather in his cap, and he was very, you know.
Yeah,
and Urban Legend. He had a big Urban Legend poster in his house. That's how I knew that he did it. I was like, oh right, you did that movie too. Okay.
That's what enticed me to watch Ugly Betty. It said created by Sylvia Horta. And I was like, oh, the guy who wrote Urban Legend. That was one of the enticements to get me to watch the show in the first place.
And he did a couple pilots after Betty, but none of them went. And I wish one of them went, you know? Like, I feel like he had so many more stories to tell, and it really frustrated him that he wasn't able within the system to tell the stories he wanted to tell sometimes. And I feel like that was a big, you know, hindrance into how everything turned out, you know?
Right.
That's how the Hollywood system, and
But hopefully the ones who are still here, we can leave the industry better than the
ones we found. Yes. That's all we can do, because
yes.
Keep making good art and hope that you can leave the industry better than the
ones we found.
And hopefully even your successful friends, you should check in on them, or people that seem happy, or people need to, it's very important to, you know, check in and be like, are you actually okay right now? You know,
if last year and this year has taught us anything, we just need to check in on everybody. And
now that we're having so many more conversations about mental health as a society, I feel like we're getting there now.
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, kudos today. Yay. I'm so glad Britney got freed. But God, you look back at everything in hindsight from 2007, 2008, it's like, God, we weren't having the conversations about mental health back then. And we were so terrible to her as a country and as a media. We failed her. And it's just, I'm glad that she's now finally getting the reprieve that she's getting today. So congratulations,
Brittany. It's just,
you are free, and I'm very happy.
It's just because, like, if they were clamoring for more, like, it's like, give me more.
Yeah.
They were just clamoring for more, and it's just
she reached her breaking point.
It's this industry. It's just,
if you're in a record label, or if you have a team that's like, Britney, be this, Britney, be that, Britney, do this, you're going to eventually reach a breaking point, because it's like, okay, well, what about me? I'm not a machine. I can't just do everything that I'm commanded to do. And it's, you know. So I'm glad that we're getting there as a society now, where we're having these discussions. And shout out to Simone Biles, who spoke out about the treatment that Olympians face when they're training for the Olympics.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we're having
there's a lot of high pressure scenarios, and just because someone's doing well doesn't mean that it's not hard to navigate.
Yeah, I took a mental health break from this podcast for like a few months, and I texted George like,
he needed some time.
Yeah, so it's like, I gave myself a few months to recuperate myself and recuperate my energy, because I was going through so much pressure. I did like, and then I texted him. He got me back off of my break, because it, and I was like, it took, but he, I'm glad he gave me that time for me to just...
I'm happy you're here, and I'm sure the listeners are too.
Yes, thank you.
Well,
thank
Joel, you. We want to say thank you so much for joining us today and stepping into our crazy little world. Do you have any upcoming projects you want to talk about?
The next thing I have coming out is a movie called The Comeback Trail, which is Robert De Niro and Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman.
Yes!
It's hilarious. It's a really funny movie, and I got to work for a month with those guys, which is nuts. And they like know my name. It's crazy.
That's like a dream country. Robert De Niro, Tommy Lee Jones. Wow.
So thankful. It was an incredible experience. And then I just had, besides Card Counter just coming out right now, I just had a movie come out called Wild Indian that I particularly love. It's a Native American story, and it is Native American Heritage Month. And it's a great cast. This Native actor named Michael Gray Eyes and another one named Chasky Spencer and Jesse Eisenberg and Kate Bosworth and myself. And it's kind of a thriller. It's so fascinating. Yeah. I just want people to hear about it and take a stab on it because it's a real special movie.
Yeah, there needs to be more Native American stories because I don't know if it's actually true, because how I see it from like how far away I am is like, I think like Native American stories kind of like halted after the New World a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like starting like a few years ago, it started to slowly pop up like for that I'm aware of. Not saying they haven't been happening that I'm aware of because of stuff that Taika Waititi is doing and more stories are prevalent that Ava DuVernay is producing and all that stuff. That's what I'm aware of now.
Sure. But this film, Wild Indian, is really a triumph. The writer director is Native American and lives on a reservation.
Awesome. Actually. It's called Wild Indian.
Wild Indian. And he lives on a reservation, and he's an exceptional talent and an exceptional person. And the movie is very dark and complex and wild and thrilling. And it's one of those things where they, you know, a traumatic event occurs and how it affects these two young boys when they were kids and how it affects them through their entire lives.
All right.
And I kind of love when shit hits the fan with like one event and how the aftermath everyone. So it's an interesting story.
So everybody, please check out Wild Indian. And on that note, Joel, we want to thank you for your time.
Thank you, kids. Thanks, thank you. Ugly Buddy. I wish someone would make another show like this.
Yes,
me too.
Never know. You might create it. I might create it.
Right.
You never know what might happen.
Let's do it. I'm going to get to work on it right now.
Okay, I'll hold you accountable to it. I'll catch you for a treatment in a month.
I'll see you guys then. We'll just
make
our own version immediately. Thanks, guys.
All right, bye.
Okay.